This program is brought to you by Podcast One Sports.
Intro music back. Number 19, we took a little bit of a departure and I got some flack for it.
Back to normal.
They said, don't do that. People get used to intro music as part of you. And so I kept it. I'll keep it Sure Shot and Beastie Boys. Don't ever do that.
Getting thrown off like that is really, it's really unsettling to get thrown off on the wrong music.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, if Cheers just decided one day, new intro.
You say Cheers intro?
I did. I said Cheers intro.
You're too young for Cheers, bro.
No, I watched Cheers. Nick at Night, man.
We'll get to Thanksgiving here in a second. Let me talk golf. That's actually a lot of golf on this podcast. We've got Nelson Adcock, who breaks down how to golf. And then Ryan Barif, we talk about golf. Tiger's back this week, man.
It's crazy.
Hero World Challenge. 18-man tournament, his own tournament in Bahamas. Invite only by committee of one, and that one is Tiger Woods. This week was something called the PGA of Australasia, which I call the PGA of Australasianine, because it was last week.
It's
the only thing I could think of at the end of it.
You tried. It's okay.
Do you like that? The field has probably 1,400th world-ranked golfers, and then Jason Day, who was former world number one, Jordan Spieth, same, Cam Smith, you know, equally good.
Yeah.
Not equally good, but pretty good. Did any of them win?
No.
No. Jason Day, 10 under going to the final day. The final day. Lost. To, like, the 1,400th ranked golfer on earth. He's gained 20 pounds, admittedly so. He said, I'm stopping working out. I'm just not going to work out anymore. I'm just going to eat pie.
And pasta.
And pasta while I play. Jason Day drinking. Jordan Spieth, new clubs, new caddy. Goodbye. And then Cam Smith, who played actually pretty well, did not win. And in my tweet, when I said before the tournament who I thought would win, I said Cam. I said Cam would win. And some guy goes, nice job hedging yourself. There's three Cams in the tournament. And then I looked at the sheet and I'm like, the next best Cam is the 1,400th ranked golfer in the world. Everyone knows who I'm talking about. And then that guy wins. It is uncanny that that guy won, because I looked at him and I wasn't even going to tweet about it, because I'm like, he's not going
to
win.
It's completely absurd to even consider this
right
guy.
Yeah. And then on the Euro side of things, the greatest mush in the history of mushes. You know what a mush is, Nathan?
No, tell me.
Okay, so what a mush is when someone is backing a golfer, really likes a golfer, and then they talk about him on Twitter in advance too quickly, right?
Yeah.
So they talk about him like, oh, he's out of his mind right now. He's shooting
destined
great. And then I am the worst at it. If I say one good thing about a golfer, he's going to bogey the next 18 holes.
Yeah.
So at about 12:42 a.m. Eastern time, and this is final day in at this Euro tournament event, you had three leaders, SSP, Teresia, Alexander Bjork, and Julian Suri. Fine. Ryan Barif had all three. He had all three.
All three, yeah.
And this was going into the ninth hole, the turn, final day. So he feels pretty comfortable to tweet, not sure what the odds of losing are, but they seem pretty slim right now.
Yikes.
And just as I was going to close my eyes, I go, that tweet was a really bad idea. I close my eyes, I wake up in the morning, and none of them win. The biggest mush in history. They were so clear. He literally could not win. A guy named Wade Ormsby won. And SSP Chiraja, who is my Indian Open master, I love him. I didn't think he'd win here, but he did really, really well. He's got what we call a black square.
Okay.
Euro app is old school, but for people who follow Euro golf, it's fundamental.
They actually have it. I've never seen the black square.
Right. Well, he was clear. This is UBS Hong Kong. And ninth hole, he was 13 under. I don't know how much he was up, but enough. He gets the dreaded black square, which he shot a 7 on a par 4.
From then
on in, it was over. And so Ormsby won, and that goes down as the greatest mush in history. But it goes to show you that the chalk ain't winning every week. And if those three cats, especially in the PGA Tour of Australasia, I'm not quitting on it, man. It's a funny joke.
Wow. Let it ride.
But in the meantime, the good thing about this week is Bitcoin. What I learned about Bitcoin was people on their holiday learned about Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And they bought a lot of it.
A lot of uncles giving advice to youngsters.
Hey, Jimmy, you might want to look at this Bitcoin thing.
Maybe buy some. I don't know.
Maybe buy some. Couple shekels on me. But to the detractors of Bitcoin, listen, here's my perspective. We talked about this when we were eating dinner. People, the detractors say it's based on nothing. You're buying nothing, right?
Yeah.
It is basically a storage of value that you hope the other party will sort of agree on that, right? Ultimately, the other party says there's nothing there, then there's nothing there.
Right.
Because it's nothing, essentially. But it is something. I mean, it costs money to mine it. It costs money to mine actual gold.
It costs a lot of money.
It costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
It costs more money to mine Bitcoin. It uses more energy than the entire country of Ireland.
For a single Bitcoin at this point.
Yeah. At this point. And that was the purpose of the algorithm. Make it more difficult the deeper you go to mine it.
Right.
So that the value of it would increase because it costs more to get it.
Right.
Much like gold.
Right, exactly. I mean,
which is worth $300 now.
Yeah.
Talking about storage of value.
Yeah, so you have the diminishing return where people were setting up, you know, Bitcoin mining PCs in their house. Now you have to have a server farm in order to be able to do it, basically.
That uses more energy than Ireland.
Right, it's insane. So,
but then you think about it, well, you're buying nothing. You're buying something of perceived value that the other party hopefully props up. Why is that different than anything? You watch that documentary on fine wine.
Yeah, it's called Sour Grapes. It's about sommeliers basically spending absurd amounts of money.
How much did he spend on wine that was fraudulent?
It was upwards of $34 million was his seller.
Right. But if you look at it at its core, what are you actually buying? You are buying perceived value. It's nothing but a glass bottle with grapes in it.
Completely perceived. I mean, it's
which just is valueless unless, like a Michael Jordan rookie card. Or art.
Mm-hmm.
Or that Van Gogh painting that sold for $500 million. It is all the perceived value that the other party's placing on it. Same with Bitcoin. It's a trust factor.
Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, you know, like we were saying, Van Gogh made zero money when he was alive. And that's able to sell for that much. It's perceived value. It's just like, I mean, essentially money is just, right now, vouchers for rocks, right? So it is an agreement. It's a social contract in a way.
It is.
So it's interesting.
Anything is a trust.
Mm-hmm.
Your bank account is a digital number readout from your bank, which they can arbitrarily wipe to zero tomorrow, and what's your recourse? If someone decides to not accept your, you know, your paper money, your U.S. currency tomorrow because it's paper and they don't value it anymore, what have you got? I mean, and then people will argue, well, it's not... there's no legal structure to it. Mm. And I'm saying that in a rudimentary way. But ultimately, there's... It's just sort of this thing. But people who are investing in Bernie Madoff, you know, he was part of the U.S. American, you know, financial system.
Right.
What was the recourse there? I mean, everything is based on trust, ultimately, right?
Yeah.
And I think Bitcoin even offers a higher level of that. You know, there's a finite amount. You know, it costs money to invest in it. And we're all, you know, we'll all have a gun pointing at each other saying, let's make this worth something
right.
together.
It does kind of feel like the Wild West, which is what makes it really exciting. But it's up. It's almost a 10.
But it's up.
It's wild.
I did a trip to Canada for Thanksgiving. So I went back after the podcast last week. And that was good. Did you have a good Thanksgiving?
I had a great Thanksgiving, yeah.
Really?
It was nice. Yeah, a lot of family. All day for 4 straight days. I don't know if that's common. And I'm pretty sure it's not. But not being able to escape for 4 straight days, it's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot. But it was fine. It was fine.
We traveled through the tunnel in Detroit. And it was funny because... And we always do either the bridge or the tunnel. This time we did the tunnel the first time, maybe ever. But it was closed for a long time. And so I thought I'd take a chance on it because the traffic was heavy and it was low through the tunnel. And so I get to the guy. This is just an anecdote because it was funny. Because he would laugh at this. But I get to the tunnel, the gate, to give the guy money. And he said it's $4.50. And I go, hey, man, is the tunnel open today? And he looks at me and he goes...
Yeah.
But exactly like you were saying.
Yes.
He looked at me. He goes, yeah. Why am I here?
You're handing me money.
Right.
I'm accepting it.
Right. And we stayed at a Best Western. By the way, the Best Western Plus brand, have you seen that logo?
No.
It's the worst.
Never even heard of that. They're still Best Westerns?
Oh, well, that's a just... They really disrupted a marketplace. Hotels.
Okay.
I know. Hilton Garden Inn and the Holiday Inn and Best Western. There used to be the upper class and lower class hotels. Mm-hmm. Either stay in shit or you stay, you know, in someplace nice. And these people said, okay, we want the casual business traveler who wants a very nice room and a free breakfast, which is great for kids, if you got a pool especially.
Yeah.
But the logo is asinine.
I don't know.
It's mahogany.
You don't hear Best Western a lot.
Who uses maroon in a logo?
I don't know.
Best Western Plus.
Drury Inn? Is that one?
No, boy. Oh, man. And I thought, what are some bad brand image makeovers? Because Best Western had a sort of notable logo, right?
Yeah, yeah. Very classic.
Remember this one? Radio Shack?
Oh, no.
They called themselves The Shack.
The Shack, yeah.
But the logo had Radio Shack on top. So it said Radio Shack, The Shack.
it's like a song.
To get this, hip with young people.
Mm. It turned out well, too. I still...
How'd that go?
Yeah, it's good because I still have a Radio Shack extension cord, I think, which is, you know, they're doing pretty well.
Do you really?
I'm pretty sure I do. That's like 20 years old. When was the last time you were in a Radio Shack?
They're closed, aren't they?
I think there might be a couple open.
Okay.
Circuit City is the one. That was rough.
Circuit City? Yeah. I like Circuit City.
Well, you can't like that anymore because it's gone.
We get home and late with two kids after a million hours of driving. Got groceries, got home. Groceries fell out of the car. Great. They rolled down my driveway. I get them all in the house. I back up the car into the garage, and I hear this explosion that sounds like a Tomahawk missile. I ran over a jar of salsa.
What?
First of all, screw you, salsa company. I'm not going to name the name for putting it in glass jars. We have quite honestly smashed 40 jars of salsa on our driveway.
First of all, I've never seen you eat salsa.
Don't eat salsa.
Okay, all right.
The family does, right? So okay. I back over it with my car, and it explodes. And if you have you, okay, two screaming kids, dark at night, freezing cold, salsa on the driveway, glass everywhere. The worst. It's the worst chemical spill in history.
I think I would curl up in the backseat of the car and just cry.
Right. So awful. I'm sweeping salsa up in my driveway.
You can't sweep salsa.
I know. Yeah. What are you going to do? Spray with a hose?
I don't know.
Kate comes out and goes, "Hey, Dad, you smell like pizza. Spicy pizza. Thanks.
Thanks, kid. You have a smile.
Thanks.
Could you go inside?
Time for bed. Santa's not coming."
Why did you buy groceries on your way home from a road trip?
We had nothing, and kids have to eat.
Oh.
That's the thing about kids. They eat every day.
Yeah, it's rough.
So, plus the elf on the shelf is back.
Yep, I saw
it. Speaking of Santa.
In Meyer.
Right. Honestly, the most frustratingly gigantic cash profit center in the history of marketing.
Are your kids in on that?
You have to be.
You have to be. Why?
Because they know other kids.
And every other kid has
talking about it. And if the elf is not in your house, then the other kid thinks Santa doesn't like me.
Okay, so it's like the Santa, I don't know, barrier Santa's to entry?
Watching
what is
you.
It?
This is Santa's representative in your house watching your behavior, which is totally terrifying.
That's the creepiest thing I've ever heard.
Hell yeah.
I thought it was just a meme. Like, who would ever buy this?
No. There's an elf that... And then the parent, and I'm not complaining because you're only going to enjoy your kid's Christmas for so long. So we don't complain about it.
Oh, yeah.
But for a lot of parents, it's work because you have to put, you know, the elf in creative positions and...
They have to move.
Like,
oh no! They have to move.
I did a zip line once across the house with a bunch of Barbies, because he gets into mischievous things every night. So they wake up and like, oh, look what the elf did!
Wait,
it rotated my tires.
How do they not have nightmares about this elf walking around their house?
She's obsessed with it. She wants to get to know it because she's terrified of it.
Yeah.
This is the first year that she understands it. And it is a creepy motherfucking
doll. It looks
doll.
So weird. Why?
It is.
Oh, no.
And then Alexander, who's getting smarter about it, said, "What's the tag on the back of that?" I'm like, oh, I never noticed.
Oh, yeah.
Should have cut it off. CCJ Enterprises made in Taiwan.
It was a complete...
Those people are trillionaires.
There were probably six full shelves of it.
Oh, my God.
In Meijer. Like... And they weren't sold out, so I guess they had just restocked. So I figured no one was buying this thing, but I guess everyone buys it.
Right.
Wow. Okay.
Right.
That's really sad.
My dad called me tonight. Speaking of Canada, he called. He goes, "Hey, are you doing your podcast tonight?" "Yes." "You need to mention the Argos. They won the Grey Cup." Did you watch the Grey Cup?
I did not.
It was on the U.S.
Was there a rouge?
Well, he did mention that. He said, "They marched downfield. We got to the..." This is how we talk. "They got to the 15-meter line." I go, "Did they get a rouge?" I go, "What is a rouge?" "Basically, anyone can kick a ball from behind the line of scrimmage through the uprights for 2 points.
Is it like rugby where you can just kick it downfield and your own team can get it?
I don't know. I mean, you can block it. You can defend it with your hands. You can kick it back. There's so many variant rules. First of all, you can have 12 men in motion on the field from the 55-yard line. And then anyone can kick the ball through the uprights for 2 points, it seems.
What happens when it's 2060 and Canadian football rules have taken over the NFL? Because if you see a good rouge, it is exciting in the weirdest way possible.
Hey, man, there's a lot of CFL fans.
I'm not even pretending like it's not interesting to watch. No.
There's just a guy who lives on my street who asked me if I was watching the Argos game tonight. I'm like, no. I'm cleaning up salsa off my driveway. Then there was the college football championship, which I'm not joking. There were seven people there.
Where?
In Canada. It was Western University, my alma mater.
Oh my.
Versus Laval.
For some reason I didn't even think. I thought it was like Australia where they just don't do college sports.
No, really. Well, it's not a huge thing.
Sounds
clearly
like
it. It's not. Basically the parents were there. And cool. I mean, it wasn't bad football, but no one cares. It's so strange. I never went to one football game when I was in college. I don't have any sort of, I don't even know what we were. Maybe the Mustangs.
Did you play basketball? Do they have basketball?
Yeah, they've got basketball. You don't have the same sort of attachment as you do down here.
Yeah,
there's no scholarships there.
Oh, right.
I don't think. Most of the greatest athletes, as you know by the University of Kentucky basketball team, mm-hmm. the best Canadian athletes come here.
No, absolutely. And there's some really good ones, obviously. Hell yeah. Great Canadian athletes.
Great Canadian basketball players.
Yeah.
They also saw... Did you see the Thanksgiving Day parade with Macy's?
No.
Okay. There was one float in particular. I won't dwell on this. Well, two. But one, 98 Degrees, had a float.
No.
They did.
Like the band?
The band...
Like the Nick guy?
Nick Lachey.
Lachey.
And his brother Drew.
And then there's the one other poor guy here.
Well, I wanted to talk about
him. Was he there?
His name's Justin Jeffrey. Jeffrey. Without the Y. This is Jeffrey. They didn't give him the last letter of the Jeffrey of his last name.
Oh, no. Is he?
And he seems like a really nice guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's probably got a regular job now.
Mm-hmm. Car salesman.
But how did he get in that band?
I don't know.
Did
college
you
friends? Or was it like a compilation type thing where some guy was like recruiting talent?
If you look at the pictures from the late 90s when they were, you know, at their prime, they're all in shirtless photos and they all, you know, are buff and tan. He's the guy wearing the tank top.
Okay, so he couldn't take the shirt all the way off. Wasn't allowed.
No. Poor and now Jeffrey. He's the guy wearing the... He's Fedora guy.
Oh, yeah.
I've never heard the guy sing alone. I don't think he can sing.
I'm trying to remember like one 98 Degrees song. Was there like an iconic one?
No. Hang on. All right. Here. Cue it up. You know this?
Yeah. Sadly.
It's basically a lot of that.
Yeah. I heard Jim Jeffer in there.
Justin Jeffer.
Oh, sorry.
Give the guy the Y at the end. Jeffer.
They should help him out a little bit. So he was just full fedora.
But they were lip syncing, you know, fedora wearing. They're 47 years old now.
I mean, how did they even get allowed into the lineup?
My thing
I don't
with
understand.
Him is, I don't know if you remember the Seinfeld episode where Kramer was at some office. He got swept up in a group of people, and then everyone thought he worked there, and so he had this job at this company.
No, I don't
remember. He was at this office once, and people were having a party. He got swept up, and everyone just thought he worked there. I think that Jeffers was probably like on the street one day buying a hoagie.
In his tank
and just
top.
This crowd of people got swept up, and he got shoved into the limo with the other 98 degrees hot body guys. And they just said, "Yeah, you're part of the band, right?"
Just sit in the back and hum.
Here's a tank top. But at the end of it was my kids waited 4 hours of the show. Plus 98 degrees to get to Santa.
Right.
For the end of the parade.
The guy.
They finally get to him. And they do 12 cutaways to Matt Lauer commentating on it.
Does anyone need to see any more Matt
no!
Lauer?
No!
Has anyone needed to what is ever it with, see any more
What
Matt
is
Lauer?
It with American live television, including golf, that requires you to always make the commentator the star? And always talk or do interviews or do side, you know, sort of input.
It's ridiculous. The amount of money those people make on those, like, live morning shows will make you sick.
Oh, Matt Lauer makes $20-25 million a year.
It's insane.
But just show Santa. It was a good Santa, by the way.
Good Santa?
Yeah, because kids don't... I mean, mall Santa and Santa at, you know...
You can't take him there anymore.
And you can't. They figure it out.
Plus, I mean, all the stories, you just don't want to...
There's really bad ones.
Yeah. You just don't want to... There's been enough in the news about bad things.
Ugh.
Just don't give your kids to strangers. Just let them watch them on TV.
No.
Right? Just let them watch it. It's fine.
But it reminded me of this week, which is Tiger Woods week for coverage. And the... He tees off at 12.05 p.m. Do you think you'll watch golf at 12.05 p.m. live on the Golf Channel?
No.
No. No, it'll be, you know, 6 hours of morning drive. And then we'll cue into Tiger's post-round interview at 4.
That's so sad.
It is.
I can't watch any of that stuff, so just tell me the gist of what you get on the morning drive.
Yeah. Euro coverage... Fantastic.
Yeah.
So this week is Tiger Week, and two guests. Barriff is going to, he is a just a fanatic of Tiger Woods. Obsessed. But we're going to break down the Hero World and then the PGA of Australasia.
So nice.
The Open. And then we've got Nelson Adcock. At Nelson Adcock. And Nelson, what I wanted to talk about was the genesis of Tiger Swing and its adaptations over the years and where it is now. Because people are going to expect Tiger to be Tiger of 2000. Smash, bang, boom, you know, destroy courses. You know, the world's caught up and he's 42. It doesn't mean he won't win. It's just a different looking swing.
Yeah, and he just can't go as hard as he did.
No.
I mean,
he's had so many surgeries. So, all right, Nelson. First of all, what's golf? Actually, before you get into that, tell me, give us your background.
Sure.
You were a club pro, right?
Yeah, I was a club pro. I went to, I guess I got really started into golf when I was in middle school, high school. I quit baseball to start and focus on golf, and that led me to playing a lot of golf. I would have liked to play in college, but I actually got injured my senior year. I got really bad tendonitis in my left wrist, and I just could not even swing the golf club well at all. So that kind of put the playing career on hold for a while, and I ended up going to Clemson University. Has a kind of like, some people may know it, it's called a PGM program. There's probably about, now there's probably 25 universities in the United States that offer it. That may be low. There may be more that have it now, but basically you go to college, you take some college classes, and intertwined in your college classes, you kind of go through the PGA certification. So every semester you have a class or two that's kind of geared towards what the PGA wants you to learn about to complete their certification of becoming a golf professional. And then there are some pretty stringent work requirements to become a PGA professional. So we knocked those out in summer and fall internships. So by the time you finish college, you have completed all the bookwork the PGA wants you to do, and you have, I think, like 20 months worth of golf work experience. So I did them at a, four internships at four different golf courses, three in Virginia and one in Las Vegas. So, basically once you're done with that, you graduate, and you get a job, you become a PGA certified, golf professional. So, I graduated Clemson in 2008, 2009. So, I've been a golf professional for a little bit and recently got out of the business. Maybe about a year and a half ago, I got hired by a member to do some forensic accounting. So I've kind of transitioned into that. But you know, that would be my Bitcoin? That would be my golf background.
Do you know anything about Bitcoin?
Do I not? I own about 5% of a Bitcoin.
Which you own 5% of Bitcoin?
5% of a Bitcoin.
A Bitcoin.
Oh. When me and my... some gambling friends used to trade money around. Trade Bitcoin a little bit. Yeah. So I went and unlocked my wallet and was hoping I had more in there. And
this podcast, Nelson Gamble.
Yeah. My Bitcoin knowledge is, I wish I had bought it the first time I saw it in, 2009 when I was big into poker, and it was kind of a little bit of a thing.
But, do we hold it or do we sell it?
Man, I would flip a coin. That's what I do when I don't know what to do.
Flip a coin.
I generally just flip a coin.
My children's future, Nelson, is on flipping a coin.
Well, there's a little bit more that goes into it than that, certainly.
here's why I kind of wanted you on. And I put a tweet out today about pros. who have a knowledge of swings.
Sure.
Teaching pros who understand swings. Because Tiger has gone through... Oh, by the way, before I forget this, you probably weren't following me at the time, but there was a huge debate. Some scratch, I put in quotes, golfer trolled me about... Because I said hitting a putt in a tweet, and he said that's the hallmark. Saying hitting a putt is the hallmark of a non-golfer commentator.
I wouldn't agree with that.
Right? Everyone says that.
Yeah. If you say hit a putt, I wouldn't say that. I've seen the most giveaways, like let's go hit some golf or something like that, where it really doesn't flow that well. But hitting putts, that doesn't seem to stand out as non-golf lingo to me.
Okay. Thank you. Well, Tiger has gone through an evolution of swings, even sort of pre-injury. He really rearranged and rebuilt. Even at his prime, it seemed, he rebuilt his swing.
Right.
Can you walk through some of the major events of his swing adjustments? And then we'll come to where we are now in terms of what you see in his swing, what's different, and sort of expectations.
Yeah, certainly. He started out with Butch Harmon, I guess, really. I don't know exactly when he started working with Butch. It was in the 90s, mid-90s. Prior to, I think during he was winning those U.S. amateurs is really when he started working with Butch. And his first major swing change came right after he won that 97 Masters. The story goes that he watched the tape of him winning that tournament and hated the way his golf swing looked. The thing that he disliked the most was if you look at the top of his golf swing in that tournament, he has what you would call, his club is pointing across the line. So, if you're looking at him from behind, a lot of times you want the golf club at the top of the swing kind of be pointing at the target. Nowadays you see a lot of golfers with the golf club pointing left of the target, kind of in what people would call, technically in some terms, a laid off position. His was the opposite.
Who's a good example of that?
Yeah. Yeah. He is.
Who is?
Oh, who's a good example of having a laid off golf swing?
Yes.
Sergio,
okay.
when he gets, once he starts his downswing, that club really starts to go out to the left and gets really laid off.
one of the best ball strikers in the world, period.
Yeah, it's not a bad position to be in. Certainly, and that's why you see the progression has been. I think in the olden days, you used to see a lot more guys that had that across the line swing. So if you look at Tiger in the 97 Masters, his club is pointing to the right of the target a lot. And, you know, I think his thinking and what most people would say in that position is just like requires a lot more work for you to get it back into a correct position. So in the golf swing, really what you're trying to do is eliminate any extra movement, anything that will cause you to require extra timing. You know, when your swing is really reliant on timing, you know, day to day, your consistency is just not as good. You have too many moving parts. So he said, scratch that, you know, I just won by 12 shots, but I'm going to go redo it. So,
which any normal human would do, win the Masters by 12 shots, yeah, rebuild right. my swing.
Yeah. So, and it's interesting if you look, so he did that, then he went with Butch for a while, I think 03, 04, sometime in there. I think it's kind of murky on like exactly when, you know, because by that time, and Butch used to say this is like when they were getting prepared for a golf tournament, they really weren't working on anything, or Butch didn't have to do much. He's, you know, he's just like, I was just tuning up a race car and just letting it go. So, it's a little tricky on the timeline of exactly when they stopped working together, but sometime in the, around that time, Tiger started work with Hank Haney. And the big difference there is, Haney got him into what people would say was a much more laid off position at the top of his backswing. I'm not a huge fan of the term laid off as far as like kind of what it describes, but the image that you see is that his club, when looking from behind again, is pointing much further left of the target. This in Haney's swing was because Tiger rotated his arms a lot more in that golf swing. As he was taking the club back, the face of the club fanned open, his arms rotated really well. And that's definitely something that I've learned as I've talked to former people that are more biomechanically focused in the golf swing and how they believe that your arms should move in the golf swing. And that is kind of like a pretty big focal point of what they believe, how they believe it should work. And so, you know, he had a huge amount of success with that golf swing. We don't unfortunately have a lot of, you know, that was right when the advanced statistics started coming in. So now we can go back and see like during those years, Tiger just had like outrageous ball striking years. I looked before I started this podcast, at just the PGA Tour leaders, in strokes gained approach. So last year the leader in strokes gained approach was just pulling up here, Jordan Spieth. He averaged 0.9 shots around on his approaches to the green. And if you go back to Tiger, mid 2000s, here are his numbers: 06, almost 2 shots per round.
Oh my God.
07, 1.8 shots per round. 08, 2 shots per round. You know, so his ball striking and was just so incredible.
And here's the thing that people don't forget about. Like they say he didn't play in tough competition. Ryan Baroff and I were talking about this earlier on text. It was in an era of Phil, Duvall, Els, Montgomery.
Yeah.
Vijay, Love, Furyk, you know, Westwood.
Yeah.
Garcia, Hall of Famers.
I really dislike that, that comparison, mostly because,
Furyk is the number, what, 4 money leader all time. He's like $64 million or something absurd like that. Can you believe that?
Yeah. Jim Furyk is,
with probably the worst looking swing ever.
You could certainly make an argument that Jim Furyk is insanely underrated.
Insanely underrated. What did he do? The 58 recently? Yeah.
The guy that came up with the strokes gained, kind of approach, Mark Brody, who's, you know, golf famous now, he wrote a book a couple years ago that, you know, the Shot Link, I guess, came out in about, you know, 2004. So they started getting all that data from then. I'm looking at this right now from this book. from 2004 to 2012, here are the guys that gained the most strokes per round. Jim Furyk is number three on this list.
Wow. All strokes gained all round?
Yeah. Just strokes gained approach.
Okay.
He's actually just like, he was over that time period, the third best strokes gained approach guy. You know, wow. Remember we said Spieth gained nine shots per round last year. Tiger over that whole time period, you know, this includes 2010, 2011, 2012 when he wasn't, you know, at his peak. But over that time period, Tiger was 1.3. And then you got Robert Allenby at 0.9, Jim Furyk 0.8, Ernie Els, Sergio, Rory, Phil, Adam Scott, Vijay Singh, Luke Donald, Chad Campbell round out the top 10. You know,
Chad Campbell? No way.
Yeah, dude, that guy can hit it. He just can't putt or chip or do anything. And he's not that long, which is
he's not
a pretty big.
He will disappoint you every time.
I remember I rostered Chad Campbell in DFS maybe in Phoenix last year, and he was in the hunt, and like the fourth hole he holed out for eagle and then promptly followed up with like a double. And then like maybe two doubles. I can't remember, but it was quite a roller coaster of emotions.
It's the Lucas Glover, Luke List phenomenon.
Yeah.
On paper, they should win 12 majors.
It is something. Yeah. So I guess back to Tiger swing. So, you know, with Haney, he's just striking the ball incredibly well. And then, you know, him and Haney kind of have a falling out. 2010, you know, when the whole scandal is going on. And then he starts working with Foley. And the big thing that you notice when he switched to
Foley. By the way, do you think Foley's glasses are prescription? Do you think he needs those?
I don't think
so. Have you seen those ads recently with him?
No. He's doing Nike ads?
It's a training ad. And he spent a lot of time prepping for it. But his glasses are absurd.
He wears them. I saw him. He wears them all the time.
Like, bro, just go to Lens Crafters and chill.
I remember I went to the Masters one year and we saw him just chilling in a restaurant by himself.
So I can make fun of him.
He's a lot smaller than I kind of expected him to be when I saw him in person. But yeah, he does wear some glasses. They're pretty eccentric. But his swing, you know, his philosophy was more of a centered, you know, rotation based golf swing. You notice Tiger early in his career and even with Haney, to start his backswing, Tiger really moved into his right side. It really is something that is actually essential in my opinion to do in the golf swing, especially to generate any power. You know, if you think about it, if you're going to throw a baseball, you know, you're going to load into your backside and then go forward. You know, same thing with golf. You want to do the same thing to generate speed. If speed wasn't important in golf swing, then sure, you could just kind of rotate around a centered axis. But, as the more we notice in the data, distance is just incredibly valuable. So you really need to be utilizing it. So pain, you know, with Foley went with the more kind of a centered approach, not really stack and tilt ish, but kind, you know, he wasn't that extreme, but it was kind of close. And I've read some stuff about, you know, this one instructor that I like really well, kind of forecasting that this move may have caused Tiger some back problems. And this, you know, this guy was stating it kind of during, like, as the Foley kind of era got started, just saying, you know, the way Tiger's trying to swing, he's trying to stay centered. What that does is when you stay on your left side more centered, you're going to have a steeper golf swing. And in Tiger's effort to shallow his swing as he comes down, you know, you saw him kind of throwing his left hip, started moving towards the target a lot more aggressively. That is generally a good thing in the golf swing when you get on your right side, but when you stay centered and then you move your left hip a lot, you really want your left hip never to go past, if you were to draw a straight line up from your left ankle. You really wouldn't want your left hip to go past that line. Just it starts to kind of wear and tear on your body a little bit too much and causes you some extra stress. But because Tiger wasn't moving into his right side in that swing, to avoid swinging so steeply at the golf ball, he kind of had to make that move where his left hip would go towards the target. You know, his upper body would hang back a little bit. He'd have kind of like this funky shape to his swing. And it's probably because this kind of TrackMan's coming out and people are, you know, learning how to hit the ball a little bit more shallower with shallower swing, and seeing the benefits, especially with the driver, to really not coming down steeply on the golf ball. So,
fast forward to now then, based on all those changes.
Right. So the thing that
you've seen his swing recently in Instagram posts. Yeah. What do you see now? And here's the thing with Tiger. Here's what I think people naturally will say, I want Tiger 2000, you know, drive par fours, swing out of my shoes. You know, he was known for massacring the ball, which the world has caught up to him in that regard, right?
Right. Yeah. I think,
one or two players back then averaged a drive over 300. He was one of them.
Yeah.
Could be stating that wrong, but it was no one.
There was a lot larger gap.
Now everyone does.
Yeah. I think actually, you know, this kind of goes back to the who played in the harder era or whatnot, but, you know, golf equipment has, I think, leveled the playing field significantly over the last, you know, couple of decades. You know, if you go out there and you try and hit, you know, those old irons, there's a significant difference between a solid shot and a miss hit. And, you know, modern equipment has kind of changed that. You know, now your miss hits and your good shots are still really good, but your miss hits are nowhere near as bad. You know, so that's kind of brought everyone into the middle. You know, the best players couldn't get any better. You can't hit a really good shot that much better. But if all your bad shots get a lot better, then you're going to show, you know, a significant improvement. What you'll see with Tiger, hopefully, in my opinion, is if you're looking at him from face on, you'll see him kind of move off the golf ball a little bit into his backswing. You should see a little bit of weight shift into his right side. That would be a very good thing to see. His actual mechanics, as far as where his positioning was in the backswing for the last couple of years, I think has been really good. He's got the club more out in front of him. In the full years, he kind of got his left arm a little bit across his chest and his hands were fairly low. What you'll see with Tiger now is he'll have his hands, his arms kind of will be out more in front of his chest, and his arms at the top of his backswing, if you're looking from behind, will be right over his right shoulder. And that is an extremely good position to be in. There's not a lot of manipulation that needs to occur on the downswing to get the club into ideal positions to hit the golf ball really solidly. And you'll know the way that you can tell if Tiger's hitting the ball, kind of how he wants to hit it is, I think one of his redeeming or like one of the best characteristics he had was if you watched him hit iron shots previously, he was always pin high. So like this week, that's one thing I'll look, you know, if he's hitting the ball pin high a lot, then you know, he's really starting to feel,
dialed in.
Yeah. I mean, it was really uncanny. You know, I think, you know, that's what led to his stroke gained approach being so high is, you know, a lot of these guys can control the ball off the face very well. You know, I've played some golf with some, you know, tour guys, and I asked them, you know, practice session, you know, what's that like? And I remember one guy told me, he's like, I'll just go out there, and if I can't hit my 7-iron and start it on my target like every single time, then I will just stay out there till I can. And, you know, so the guys are incredibly good at face control, but really what sets the best of the best apart is being able to get the correct yardage every time. And that just comes from really solid ball striking. You know, the more solid you hit it, the less, distance there's going to be between your good ones and your bad ones if you're hitting them all really good. So that will be the thing to look at. Obviously, we're hoping he's going to be injury free, but I think if you see him kind of move off the ball into his right side, keep his hands in front of him, you know, he always talks about getting stuck. You know, that's a common thing from him for the last, you know, decade essentially. And that just is basically when your body outraces your arms kind of get stuck behind And the only thing you can really do from that position as your arms try to catch up is either hit it way right or you kind of try and save it and then you smother hook it and hit it left.
What do you expect this week from him? And who do you think is going to win? The hero.
Man.
Realistically, non-barrel.
I mean, I think Dustin is probably playing the best golf in the world and has, in my opinion, the kind of the ability to just destroy fields more so than anyone currently, I would
even
say.
Even Thomas right now?
Yeah. I mean, on a regular basis, yes, right. I would think so. I think Dustin's game is just a little bit more fine-tuned than Justin. Kind of confusing saying Dustin and Justin, but you know, Spieth is obviously extremely good. Rory is, you know, he's kind of up and down, not as good. So I think for me, kind of Dustin is like my go-to guy nowadays. I mean, it's just. He's probably the Vegas favorite. I haven't checked.
You think Tiger finished top 10? Top 10 in an 18-person field?
I think there's a decent chance that occurs. I would expect him to play. You know, I would expect him to play pretty well. I have heard some behind the scenes stuff that is relatively good about his health. I have, you know, only a couple degrees of separation somehow between me and Tiger Woods. So the people that I know, have said that he feels really good, really strong. And you know, he's just not going to go out there and embarrass himself. I don't think, you know, he is a big time competitor. He, you know, I've heard one of the things that he likes to do. And if you learn about how kind of the body works and how the mind learns new motion patterns is, you know, just putting in the reps, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be, you know, with a golf club, but you want to just be moving your body in the way you want it to move. And the more you do it, the, you know, the better it becomes. Haney will tell a story about how at the, I think it was 05 Masters, you know, he won that Masters. That was when he had the chip in, but he says that Tiger spent hours every night just in front of a mirror in his, you know, whatever house he was renting, just doing slow motion golf swings. You know, getting the feeling. So, you know, he's been restricted physically, but I would expect him to come out there and, you know, if he's hitting the ball long, that's obviously an extremely good sign as far as back health to me is concerned. So the other areas is just kind of polishing up the distance control, the short game, especially, I don't, you know, if they play, I don't know how grainy the Bermuda is down in Albany, but I know if you have kind of a dicey short game, chipping on grainy Bermuda is about the last place you want to be. So, I think I didn't hear anything bad about his short game today. I saw a few, Instagram videos, I guess, of him chipping, that seemed they can be a little deceptive because no one knows where his target is. They, you know, a lot of the tour guys will throw down little markers on the green. So they're not necessarily hitting at the flag, but, I think that will be, to me, I'll just be looking at the golf swing and the contact. And, you know, if he's kind of hitting the shots, the right distance, that's going to be a huge thing for him for sure.
I appreciate it, Nelson.
You're welcome.
That's very good insight, man.
Thanks.
I think I know more about golf now.
Hopefully I can give you a little bit of insight into kind of what we'll be looking for when Tiger tees it up on Thursday.
And so everyone here who's listening, follow Nelson on Twitter. Do you want them to follow you? Should I mention your name?
Yeah, sure. You can follow me.
Okay. It's Nelson Adcock on Twitter, and go through his photos.
Yeah. We won't have, there's no cut. There's no cut this week. So we won't have cut sweats running either, but
yeah, if you go through his photos, it's from like September 2nd and he takes a picture of his backyard. he's got basically a golf course back there.
Yeah.
What are you, a billionaire?
No. That's not too bad. I just got a projector and we'll be watching some Clemson football in the next few weeks. See if they can
check out his backyard
down again.
It's number one on earth.
It's true.
Thanks, bro. Good, appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Matthew.
Yeah, man.
See you, man. Bye.
Cash take you on the natural joint. Cream, get the money.
Tiger Woods, y'all.
Hey, Ryan. What's it like to have the greatest mush in the history of golf?
And for those out there who don't know what a mush is, it's when you're confident that your play is pretty much guaranteed and you're going to win, and you talk about the player, how good he's playing, and then they go in backwards. Straight up, when you tweeted this, I thought, yeah, I mean, you got it. You had the top three. It was like 1 a.m. I was with my kids at a hotel, a Best Western in Windsor, Ontario. And I thought, wow, you got top three, bro. You got this. Went to bed. And what happened? Black square.
Yeah. That was painful. I don't believe in the mushing power as much as others, but that was as bad as it gets, you know? I mean, like you said, I had the top three at the turn.
At the turn, your tweet was, quote, this is 12:41 a.m. on November 26th. Not sure what the odds of losing are, but they seem slim. You are the 1-2-3, Charasia, SSB, Alexander Bjork, and Julian Suri. And you were clear of the field. Everyone was playing like ass. But I still,
that was the biggest part, is I still looked at everyone else.
I still looked at the tweet and I go, before I close my eyes to go to bed, I'm like, this tweet was a bad idea, man. What happened?
As you said, we got black squared.
What's SSP a black square for those non-Euro players?
Yeah, so the European Tour app, they don't have shot tracker, and the scores just randomly pop up. So you just keep refreshing and refreshing until your guy has a score on a hole, and anything that is a bogey is blue, anything worse than that is black. So he got the black square on the ninth hole. He made a triple bogey. But the thing is, I mean, look.
And he tried to crawl back on the back nine.
Yeah,
and,
so.
And he blue squared everything else.
So the guy makes birdie on the next hole and then bogey, 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 bogey. But. Yeah, that was pretty painful. And then also for those of you guys who were watching, I had basically the exact same guys on my DraftKings lineup, which was winning all day and then finished second in the end. So I had three guys who were tied for second, finished second on DraftKings, and I deserved it.
But listen, I had Wade Ormsby, but I had him with Jason Day in the PGA Austral Lasian asinine. And I thought, okay, Jason Day's leading this, you know, BS cockamamie tournament. Certainly the recent world number one can close it out. Did he? No. What was up with that? Like, Day and Cam and Spieth couldn't win that tournament versus a world-ranked 1,300? I'm annoyed.
Yeah, that was painful. You know, he always has the added pressure of being the hometown favorite. I mean, 80% of the field was Aussies, but of course, he's the best one there. He's expected to win. And, you know, when the conditions get tough,
bro, he could play in pressure. He could play in footy pajamas and win.
Pressure, but I don't know. He seems very mentally fragile. And I just
he's gained 20 pounds.
Oh yeah, he's doughy.
And not people are saying, because we watch this stuff, and people are asking if it's a good 20 pounds. According to him and my eyeballs, no. Tell me what he said. You told me this afternoon.
Yeah, well, so he's become friends with Tiger over the years, and they talk about, you know, how to work out and stuff. And I think Tiger basically told him, like, look, you know, I did what I did. You know, my body was in shape, but, you know, I hurt my back. And Rory's going through the same stuff with the weightlifting, with the back and the ribs and the shoulder. And Jason Day basically said, I'm not going to lift weights. So he does a little bit of cardio, obviously not enough. But he's going to have no muscle tone, and it's showing. You know, he does not look in shape like he used to, and we're going to see how that kind of plays out over the next few years.
He could lay off the pie, honestly. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a fan of his in general, but there's something going on there.
And secondly, you said he's a friend of Tiger's. If I said this earlier today, if if Tiger invites you to play at the Hero World Challenge, you play. Him, Leishman's at least playing in a tournament this week. Day's doing nothing. Bro, it's a trip to Bahamas.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising that he's not there, and of course that he's not at the Australian PGA. So kind of interesting there, for sure.
There's a guy playing this week that hasn't played in a while, and it's Tiger Woods. Have you heard of him, Ryan?
Let me sit up straight here. Ooh, yeah. I think it moves. This is my Super Bowl every year. Seems to be the same thing with him. But this feels different, not just, you know, with the hype and everything like that, but I mean, anyone who knows like the type of back surgery that he got and why he got it, there are going to be consequences, but I think in terms of, you know, seeing him play a day and withdraw, play a day and withdraw, I don't think you're going to see that anymore. He's going to take it easy. He's obviously going to be extremely rusty. But I think he plays 5-6 events. He'll probably play a few of the majors, and hopefully we see some flashes.
We went through his history this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
He's won 106 professional tournaments.
40. And that was missing 5 years of his prime, basically.
79 on the PGA Tour. What, did he win the Buick Open like 28 times?
yeah. I mean, he's got his courses that he loves, and he wins there 5, 6, 7, 8 times. So
40 times on the European Tour. Granted, they counted the majors as European Tour events. But 18 WGCs. 18. If you win one WGC, you're an all-timer. Let's just win 18.
I mean, that's basically another major, right? That's
a sure.
Of 80 of the top players in the world, it's basically another major.
The first billion-dollar athlete, I think they have. I mean, he won $101 million on tour. Big deal. He won, you know, he had so much more in sponsorships, course design, and it just a phenomenal, you know, human being and athlete on this planet. And people like him so much. I talked about this earlier before you were on. I think because he's so authentic, right? He is who he is. He's so different. He is the probably, you know, next to Jordan or with Jordan, the fiercest competitor that's ever played sports, honestly. I mean, you talked about Patrick Reed being a warrior earlier today, and I don't know if that was a troll or not. You'll have to tell me. Is it?
I think we said it. I think it was taken out of context, but in terms of, you know, we said, if Tiger is in contention, are there going to be guys like Fowler, per se, who would actually kind of let him win and be rooting for him? And I said, sure, Patrick Reed is not that guy. He wants to win every week. He famously wears red and black on Sundays, Reed does, because he's a fan of Tiger and how intimidating he was. And that even they've played together on Sundays in the final round. And Reed will show up wearing a red shirt and black pants, and he just doesn't care. So, in that sense of the word, he was a warrior.
Would Tiger Woods throw a putt at the OHL Mayakoba to get on a plane early? That's my question.
No, Tiger would win by 12 and then win the next week.
Just because, right?
Yes.
Like, he'd go on a web.com tour event just to destroy people.
Yeah, so real quick, because we were talking about all his records, let's just talk about the obvious... the most impressive one. Do you know the number on how many cuts he made in a row?
It's in the 90s, right?
No. Because we do this, I mean, as we handicap every week, you know, okay, this guy's good. He's made 8 of his last 9 cuts. This guy's made 5 cuts in a row, whatever. Tiger made 142 cuts in a row.
Good God.
It was 8 years. He didn't miss a cut for 8 years. Like, that on its own. And he was playing, you know, 20, 25 times a year. So you think about that, you know, he didn't miss a cut for almost a decade. That is the most impressive feat
that means he cared about every event he played in, and that he didn't give up, he didn't quit, he didn't say I'm tired, I'm going to go, you know, veg out. He was there to destroy everyone. And I think my favorite moment of Tiger destruction, and I'll watch this video 1,000 times, was the Stephen Ames. Was it a WGC? No, it was match
play.
Yeah,
that was the match play. Yeah, it was the right. WGC match play.
And he said, Stephen Ames said prior to the event, you know, I think I've got a shot, or anyone has a shot, based on where Tiger is hitting it off the tee, or something to that effect.
Yep.
And would Tiger close him out?
9-8.
9-8. And said at the end, it wasn't just a fluke either. And it wasn't that Tiger wasn't listening. And Tiger said at the end, I think basically Stephen knows now never to say that again.
Yeah, they asked him, what did you think of his comments? And Tiger said 9-8. That's it.
Yeah.
9-8.
So this week we're in Bahamas. There's only 18 guys in this field. We've talked about Day, who was an invite, and a Tiger friend who's choosing not to play. Leishman is the other one. Otherwise, it's made up of recent major winners, you know, the world, I guess, top 50, it seems. And the last year's winner, which was Hideki Matsuyama, who was on a torrid pace going into this tournament. And it was surprising to me that Bubba Watson, who won here at this course, at the Hero in 2015, wasn't invited. Or maybe he was invited and chose not to play. Was that surprising to you? Because he's a character and he's a ratings grabber.
Yeah. I mean, I would think he is not invited. I mean, just kind of looking back at some of the leaderboards here, the field has gotten better every year. A couple of years ago, you know, we had guys like Kirk and Lahiri and Walker and Horschel, and it's getting better. I mean, right now, I mean, this year, obviously, we have all the top guys, right? We have Brooks and DJ and Spieth and Fowler and JT. But as far as Bubba goes, you know, I think he just doesn't have that many close friends on tour. And Tiger is obviously not one of them. And Bubba's not playing well. You know, I think based on
World 79. Can you believe that? That he's the World 79?
Yeah, I mean, the rankings, obviously...
They are what they are.
Very much.
I don't think he's the 79th best golfer on the tour. I don't at all. I mean, I'd take Bubba over a lot of other people.
Yeah, he's probably a top 50 still, but...
Sure.
I just think, you know, it's a very small field, and there's about 8 guys that Tiger always wants there. You know, he's going to invite Ricky and Spieth and DJ and Fowler and those guys, and he fills it out with the guys who are playing well, so... We have some of our favorite Euro guys in here. We got Fleetwood. We got Justin Rose, who's on fire. And I'm excited. It's a good week.
Tiger Woods' board selection pick, and there's a board of one, and that includes Tiger. His pick was Tiger and Daniel Berger. So.
Yeah. I think the Berger thing, again,
You don't like Daniel Berger, do you?
I don't. And he lives in Jupiter down here, so he sees Tiger all the time. And I mean, all the guys live down here, for those of you who don't know. Berger, Fowler, and JT, and Brooks, and DJ, and Tiger, they all live, and Rory, they all live and train down in Jupiter. So, they get to practice against each other every day.
So the course, you know, we don't want to go in this links debate again. It's not,
no.
It's not exactly beside the ocean. It's 7,300 yards. It was designed by Ernie Els. It's on the street called Ernie Els Way, which is one thing that surprised me. I'm surprised that Ernie wasn't one of the picks. I mean, I would think that he would be a token ad because it's basically his course, but nonetheless, he's not there. But the course is not directly beside the ocean. A lot of dune bunkers. It's all built on sand.
Yeah.
There is, you know, there is some wind conditions, so they do classify it sort of as a links course. What can you tell us about the course in general?
Sure. So first of all, it's an exhibition, meaning they want birdies on TV, and that's what you're going to see. So the course itself, I mean, as you described it, I would describe it as kind of a desert links course, and it would qualify as a coastal just because, you know, it's near the ocean. There's going to be some wind. It's not too narrow. The fairways are pretty generous, but there's no rough. So if you miss the fairway, you're in the sand. But it's playable. It's like the native area stuff. So lots of fairway bunker shots, but there's no rough. So based on that, I mean, guys aren't going to have too much trouble finding fairways and greens. And they're going to have to make birdies. It's not long. It's a par 72, but it's unique in that it actually has five par fives and five par threes. That's going to obviously bump up the scoring a ton. You know, now these guys are getting 20 par fives instead of what they usually see. So that's why I think when Bubba won here, he was 25 under. Matsuyama got close to that last year, and he was like 15 under on the par five. So
yeah, very reachable too.
It's going to be huge.
Reachable.
Yeah, one of the things that was kind of really interesting to me, because I was looking back at that on like who we expect to see, right, as our par five scorers. You know, Brooks was the first one who came to mind, and he didn't play well last year. So I went back and kind of looked through it. On the 20 par fives, what do you think his aggregate score was on the 20 par fives?
I don't know. Four under?
Exactly right. He was four under. And when he's playing well, he should be about 18 under. So I think that stuff is going to even out a bit. And this course is perfect for Brooks. It's hard to not like him this week.
Yeah, because, you know, and it doesn't speak, at least recently, in terms of his around the green play, but he is not a bad short game player. I mean, he's good around the greens, and he can be a good putter. I mean, he plays really well at the British Open.
Yeah, he's definitely improved his short game. And I mean, like we are going to talk about this time of year, you know, a lot of these guys are on vacation and they're checked out. But one thing that I've noticed is the guys who are like on a run, albeit in the FedEx Cup playoffs or in the Asian swing, if they come here in form, they play well. I think you tweeted about Matsuyama earlier, who had basically won, what, four out of five events last year. And he came here and just smashed everyone. So, and then we saw that with Justin Thomas also last year. He went to Hawaii and he won everything. So I think this time of year, you got to find the guy who's on fire. And Brooks just won in Japan by nine.
Right. Yep.
He won by nine. Yeah.
And Justin, you know, Justin Thomas, his short game probably is undervalued, but he's one of the best scramblers and clutch putters in the world.
Yes.
Right now, he's probably top, you know, he may be the best.
Yeah, and it's only for one round, but what do you think about the fact that he's paired with Tiger tomorrow for the first round on Thursday?
I think that if anyone is going to be not intimidated by Tiger and love the competition, it's Justin Thomas.
Yeah.
I think that Justin Thomas, out of all the golfers on tour who, you know, we talked about it earlier today on Twitter, obviously there's a huge affection for Tiger by all, they're all younger than him, for the most part. Actually, all of them are younger than him. Not Kuchar. Oh, Kuchar is too. But they all basically grew up watching Tiger, in awe of him. Would there be some rejoice from these multimillionaires if Tiger won a tournament? Absolutely. But if you had to pick one person that would never let him win, to me, Justin Thomas is just a maniac. And it was the CJ in Korea that he won. After, you know, so many weeks of golf, and he won in the playoff against Leishman, when he could barely swing a club, but he, by God, he was not losing that. By the way, the CJ Cup it's going to be one of my favorites on tour.
Yeah, that's a cool one. And I was thinking about the pairing the other way too, like how's Tiger going to play with JT? But then you realize,
crush him.
Who made the pairings? It was the committee of one. So obviously he wanted to play with JT. Because you can tell by the pairings that they were done on purpose. You know, they put two Swedish guys together, Norén and Stenson. They put Fleetwood and Rose, who are best friends, together. DJ and Brooks, who are best friends together. So they gave everyone some nice, comfortable pairings for rounds one.
Yeah, go put yourself in Justin Thomas's shoes, who was born in 1993. So he was 6 and 7 years old in Tiger's prime. And now he's in the Bahamas in a pairing with him as, you know, Justin Thomas arguably and could be and possibly will be the number one golfer in the world. What's it got to be going through his head? How incredible is that? Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's got to be cool.
Here's who I... All right. We did the elimination today. And I think in this field of 18... when short game is probably a premium, especially around the green, I'm going to eliminate some players. And I think we, for the most part, agreed on it. Mm-hmm. Let's go. Let's not say Tiger first. Chapel, no.
No.
Hoffman, no.
No.
Norin, no.
No.
Molinari, worst good player putter in the world. Don't even close. Don't even debate.
You can basically lock in about a 12th or 11th place finisher in here.
Yeah.
Right in the middle. Yeah.
Fleetwood, in one of the best in the world, tee to green. Fundamentally exhausted.
He's got to be dead, yeah.
Bad short game. Right. Fleetwood, no. Kisner, no.
No.
Kuchar, no.
Not for the win, maybe a top five.
Sure.
But not for the win.
Patrick Reed, not... Not a regular winner on tour, good player. I think like a Fowler, in terms of a win week to week guy, mm-hmm. is overvalued. I'm going to say no.
Yeah, one other nugget about him. Like me, he is expecting a baby in a week. So should that come early, he could be out of there. So just be careful with him this week.
Right.
Be a withdrawal candidate.
By the way, December 8th, your baby's due.
Mm-hmm. Very exciting stuff.
That is exciting. Boy or girl?
It's a girl.
Oh, so, girls are the best.
I'm going to have one of each, and yeah, that'll be an interesting dynamic.
You'll love it.
Yeah.
Burger? No.
I won't even say it.
Stenson with the rib injury, season ending 4 weeks ago. I'm going to say.
Why is he here?
I don't. I mean, I guess he doesn't want to give up the opportunity to hang out in Bahamas and play with Tiger. So.
And probably collect a nice check. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
He's hurt.
So I'm saying no. So that leaves us Thomas, DJ, Spieth, Fowler, Rose, Koepka, Matsuyama, and Tiger. I think Fowler, from a talent perspective and a skill perspective, there's no way you could overrate him. He's phenomenal. From a human being standpoint and from an ambassador of the game standpoint, same thing. From a win week-to-week standpoint, I think he's overvalued. I don't see him as a guy... I mean, if he can't close out Kazire at a Sandals Resort Club... in Mexico,
yeah,
with 30-year family there, I don't know how we can top this field. Top five, yeah, you know, sure.
Yeah, I think it's tough. You know, I mean, we have, you know, our own ways of how we look at these tournaments, but kind of what we're targeting, right? We're targeting guys who can play well in the wind. We're targeting guys who score well on par fives. We're targeting guys who have great short games. That's Ricky Fowler. And then you look back, he's finished third twice here. And obviously he didn't close out Kazire, but you can't overlook the fact that he finished second in his only start. So I'm having a hard time getting away from him. I'll say that.
Okay. I think Spieth, he seems to heat up Pebble Beach-ish, Hawaii, take a break. And then heat up again against Dean and DeLuca with, of course, a stop at the Masters.
Yeah.
And his PGA Tour of Australasia asinine was not phenomenal. New irons. I'm going to have to say that JT Rose, possibly Koepka, are my three. Mm-hmm. Only because Matsuyama is in, if you've seen his swing recently, it's fugly. Yeah. It's fugly.
Yeah, it's a mess. I'm with you for the most part. You know, I think those five, we have the winner in there somewhere. So Spieth, Fowler, Rose, JT, Brooks. I think that's the group. I'm going to say my three are going to be Brooks, Spieth, Fowler. Those would be my top three.
The one caveat is Tiger.
Yes.
And anyone out there who's a fan of golf is going to back him. Regardless, right? I mean, he's what, 35 to 1 right now?
Yeah, there are a couple trolls out there who I think they also like Tiger, but they're just trying to be difficult.
Who? Name names.
Tim Frank, who I love.
Tim Frank, he's funny.
I chat with him all the time. He's just trolling Saul and I mostly. And then Diaz was saying some stuff today, trying to rile up the crowd by saying Jack Nicklaus is the greatest of all time. And while he's not incorrect, today is not the day for that argument, Diaz.
Dustin's being contrarian.
Yes.
We gotta love Double D.
He's not wrong. It's just not the day for it.
No, it's not the day for it. All right. So JT Rose, Koepka.
Brooks. Yeah.
With Tiger Woods always gonna be
what are you saying? I mean, what are you expecting from Tiger this week? How do you think he finishes?
What did he have the most birdies last year?
Yeah, he basically
35,
22 birdies last year. He beat two people plus Rose, who withdrew, so he finished in 15th. He's obviously healthier this time around.
I think he's healthier, mind, body, spirit.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen the videos. Like, his swing is like whatever. It looks okay. It looks like he has speed and power, but he looks happy, right? He's out there practicing. He's walking around. He looks happy. And
he looks younger. He looks healthy. Guys who have played with him or watched him play this week have said that they're really amazed by his his shots. It's a matter of his short game, getting it back sort of in line, because that's his game. Yeah. And I don't expect him necessarily to win it. I do not expect him to finish last. Where does he go next?
He's not going to play for a while. He won't play till probably some stuff in California, which would be
Pebble?
February. Yeah, be Torrey Pines, Riviera, and or Pebble. He'll probably play two of those, and then they come for the Florida Swing, where, fingers crossed, he'll be playing the Honda down here, so I'll be there.
Let's go to Euro or PGA Australasia. What we've learned from last week is that even if you have some of the top-ranked golfers in the world, Spieth, Day, Cam, in a very weak field, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to win.
Nope.
Same thing here with this week, the Australian PGA Championship. And last year, I watched it. Harold Varner won, and he beat Andrew Doat, who had a hell of a tournament. Again, it's a roll of the dice with these things. I think Cam played pretty well last week, but outside of I think Sergio was, he needs to wrap it up for a little while. He's played a lot of golf. Mm. Mark Leishman's playing. His course form here is 11th, 11th, 21st. So he hasn't dominated it. Adam Scott is playing. He has done well here. He's won it, finished second, finished third. Outside of those four, Leishman, Garcia, Scott, and Smith, Harold Varner is the returning champion. Who do you like outside of the chalk? If you were going to avoid the chalk and say, listen, you know, it isn't necessarily true that the chalk wins every week, even on these weaker field tournaments. Who do you like?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, one guy you mentioned, Andrew Doat, who finished runner-up here last year. What's interesting is in 2015, Harold Varner III finished runner-up here and then came back and won the following year. So I think Andrew Doat could follow that trend. He's a bomber. He makes birdies. He's an Aussie. And he has obviously proven that he can play well here. The other guy I'd like a little bit shorter is your boy, Ryan Fox.
Ryan Fox.
You know, he is a New
Zealander. Smashes it
off the tee, which is good here. There's a lot of par fives here that are reachable. He's made three cuts in a row here. Ninth last year, 11th in 2014. He's made a bunch of cuts in a row. He's really good. I mean, we know that. He played well all through the summer, played well at the British Open.
Very good tee to green.
Yeah, so those would be the two that I like most for guys, I think, who can win outside of the top four.
I would agree with on both of those. I would, you know, I'm going to ride Doat until he wins, as someone said on Twitter. He said, one of these days, your guy Doat's going to get a win. So, the guy, Thomas Detry, played really well last week. And he played really well at tee to green. And I was surprised that he was, I think he's a little undervalued. So he's one I'm looking at, Detry from Belgium, younger guy. Herbert, a 21-year-old from Australia, another one. He's second and sixth in his last two starts. And, you know, he choked up a little bit at the end last week, but another one that could be in the mix. I don't think Ormsby is going to go back-to-back. Another name that looked good from Zimbabwe, 21-year-old young guy, Sean Crocker. Ever heard of him?
I have not.
Well, he played great last week. So I like Sean somewhat based on his performance last week. And I think that's probably
it. Yeah, I think the one thing that we should mention, right, is obviously, I mean, 80% of the field is Aussies, and they're going to win. A couple other middle guys.
Chase Koepka. Koepka. Like. It's a Koepka double, as yeah. Perry said. Perry.
Sam Brazel.
Yeah.
And Rain Gibson, a couple of Aussies who have won in the last year. Brazel won the Hong Kong one last year. Rain Gibson was winning on the web.com and now has his tour card. But there are a couple guys who have okay course history and they're in okay form. Just looking back, because I was curious, not including the Varner win last year, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. We had 16 straight winners from Australia. So just going to throw that out there.
Shit.
So... if you saw my card that I posted on Twitter, I had five Aussies and Ryan Fox from New Zealand. So I'm sticking with that trend.
Yeah, it's got to be Andrew Doat. He's got to win this.
I'm all about Andrew Doat. Yeah, absolutely.
I just hope he doesn't have the lead going into the final day, because it really messes with his head. I forget what tournament it was, but he was playing with Poulter in the lead group recently. And it was just those two playing with the lead. It was a freaking nightmare. I forget what tournament it was, but it was bad. So, okay, fine. Doat's our guy. So Doat, I'm going with JT.
All right. I'm going to, yeah, I'll backtrack a drop on Fowler, even though I do think he's going to win, and I'll take Brooks.
Okay.
So Doat and Brooks.
All right, man. Don't mush it for us this week, okay?
I am taking a Twitter hiatus once Tiger starts. I will not say anything about the tournaments until Sunday.
All right. See you in Bahamas.
All right. I'll see you there, bud.
Bye. We went long because of two really good guests, Barriff and Nelson Adcock. Thanks to them both. I'll keep this brief, but I think it's important, and this will stick with me forever. And I am a fatalist by nature. Every day, and maybe this is good or maybe this is bad, but I always treat it as my last. and it helps me with having no regrets and making sure I leave, you know, the day or, you know, the mornings with, you know, in the best standing with the ones around me. Never leave angry, never go to bed angry. But David Cassidy, who was the front man, I guess, for the Partridge Family. Now, the Partridge Family was before my time. But he passed away recently. He was only 67, which in today's terms is very young. And David Cassidy, I've read, you know, in terms of fandom, I think he had a bigger following than Elvis, bigger fan club than Elvis. Massive. And he lived a very hard life, self-inflicted, alcoholism, you know, onset dementia late in life, passed away from liver and kidney failure. And what struck me about his passing, and I do sort of obsess about these things, especially with celebrities, what year they were born, what year they died, what they died of, only because it just sort of puts a timeline on my own mortality. As you get older, you realize, oh my God, I don't have much, you know, I've got half the life left that I've lived, if that. And I guess his daughter Katie was by his bedside, and she shared that her father David Cassidy's last words before he passed away, before he left this earth, to her was so much wasted time. That's what he said. He said, so much wasted time. And for those who've listened to every podcast, in an earlier one, I mentioned that, and this is not something profound, but it is something to, you know, consider, that your most valuable asset in life is not money, it's not wealth, it's not possessions. It's not your, even your legacy or your career. It's time. That is the most precious asset you've got, because it's such a finite quantity. And you never know how much you've got. And he looked back on his life in those last moments of his time on earth, and he said to his daughter, so much time wasted. And so much wasted time. Almost an apology. Just saying, I'm sorry for wasting it on things that didn't matter. Because now it's gone. And so if you look at your life, And I do this, and this just reinforces this for me, that you look at your life and you think, what is truly important in my life? My circle, my family, my kids, which should be, and what is not? And don't waste it. Don't wait. I mean, a lot of people go through midlife crisis in their 40s. I went through in my late 20s and 30s. I was an insane person. And now I act like an 80-year-old. Virtually. Because I don't want to waste time on things that don't matter. So I want to spend as much time with my kids as possible, as much as humanly possible as I can, and my family. So think about that. I know it's not, you know, congruent to what this Golflandia podcast is about, but I thought that tidbit was a good piece to share, because if it can influence your life, you always want to learn from people who've lived lives, especially hard lives like David Cassidy, because it can happen to any of us. You know, those things, addiction, happen to every one of us, including myself. So don't look at your life and think about the time that probably is better used in better places, because you never want to be in his spot with seconds of your life left, looking at your child and saying, I'm sorry I wasted so much time. And that's it. All right, it's back. By popular demand, Smashing Pumpkins. They said, do not get rid of that song again, sir. On the PGA in Australia, Doat, Detry, Fox. If you're looking for things outside of chalk, it's out of Cam and Leash. Brooks, Rose, JT. But can Tiger win? I hope so.